All right, welcome to Rockin' the Suburbs. As you can tell, I am not Patrick Foster or Jim Lanahan. This is Kevin Clement. And for these special episodes, I am joined by two great gentlemen. We have Mr. Justin Steiner.
Hey, everybody.
How you doing? And of course, Mr. Stephen Routledge out there in Scotland. How are you?
Hi, Kevin. Yeah, Justin. Yeah, it's good to be with you guys, hanging out, talking music again. It's good.
Oh yeah, definitely. And for this set of shows, we decided to do on a band called Delamitri. And it's a band that we all really, really like. I know among the community, I know Stephen and Justin are known as basically the music twins. They kind of like all the same music. And some of my tastes delve into some of their areas. So it kind of worked out. And also how it started, we were actually talking about doing a show with about I think Matthew Sweet, was it?
Yeah, I think so.
With Niklas. And I think we're still planning on doing that. That's not thrown out yet. But we're definitely doing these right now. So all right. Give a little bit about the band and then we'll kind of get going from there. They're a band from Glasgow, Scotland, formed in 1980. And of course, Justin Curry is a singer, bass player, songwriter, pretty much the main member of the band. And when they originally started, they had James Scoble on guitar, Donald Bentley also on guitar, and I'm gonna pronounce his name wrong, Paul Tayagi on drums. And please correct me on pronunciations, because I'm not good with them. And let's see, James and Donald left the band in 1982 to go to university. So they had Ian Harvey replace them with guitar, and also Brian Tolland. And Ian's, I think, pretty much remained in the band to this day, correct?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, basically, I think at this point, Delamitri is Justin and Ian and whoever else is playing with him at the time. You know, it's kind of like, if you've got those two, it's Delamitri, and if Ian is not playing with him, it's Justin Curry's solo project. So,
there you go. So, all right. So, yeah, in 1984, they signed with Chrysalis Records, and they started with their debut album in 1985, the self-titled Delamitri. So, why don't y'all go ahead and talk a little bit about that album?
Goodness, I don't know if there's a whole lot really to say about that album. When you listen to it, I feel you might think that you accidentally listened to another band named Delamitri rather than the actual Delamitri. Justin Curry's voice doesn't even sound like it ends up becoming, you know, his kind of rich croon where he gets all the emotion in with the melody. And that's really kind of lacking in that first album. Another thing for me that's lacking in that first album are just songs. The strong melodic pop songwriting of the group is just completely absent there. I'm not sure who they're trying to be. Kevin, before we started recording, you had suggested maybe XTC, but they're trying to be XTC. They unfortunately failed spectacularly at that as well. Stephen, do you share my opinion?
Well, the mind meld is strong because my notes on the debut album, of which, and I'll be completely honest, and we'll talk about this more when we get further down the line, I was completely unaware of the debut album when it was released. But yeah, unrecognizable from the later sound. I put The Smiths, early R.E.M., Elvis Costello, and especially XTC are big influences.
Yeah.
So there are occasional...
Yeah, you could hear a little bit of new wave. If...
Yeah, there's a fairly generic 80s indie band, effectively, on this album, aren't they? There's hints of what might come, but it could be, as you said, it could be a completely different band making that album. However, one comment I did have is that our mutual friend Scott Parks will probably think this is the best thing they ever did. I'll be interested to hear his thoughts on that. But
yeah, he might. But knowing, you know, all of the albums that followed, trying to listen to this first album is just, it's really difficult because, yeah, it sounds absolutely nothing like the rest of the albums. And to be honest with you, the only one I can really listen to is the last song called Breaking Bread. And I think what we're going to do is we're going to play you the last 30 seconds of Breaking Bread, which is the last song on that album. And we're going to start it with the first song on the next album, which is called Waking Hours. And the song is Kiss This Thing Goodbye. And hearing these two, I think you'll be able to tell the stark differences in the sound.
Stark is the word for it.
Yes.
Indeed. Yes, we'll discuss that a bit more, possibly quite soon, but that's let's give it a spin.
So there, I'm sure you can tell a little bit of difference. Definitely Kiss This Thing Goodbye has a much more poppier sound to it. And I'll let Stephen or Justin go a little bit more into that.
Well, I mean, I would say they'd moved record labels between the first and the second album. They had a major falling out where Chris Lisson got signed to A&M. Yeah, 4 years later, and I put down in my notes, really, they clearly discovered the Rolling Stones, Van Morrison, country music, and to my ears, especially Tom Petty.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe not in the vocals of Justin Curry, but musically, yeah. I think. The production is at a far higher level. The band sound much more muscular and confident, but, I mean, the stylistic leap, the only thing I could think, two things that immediately sprung to mind to compare to it, was like if you played someone Murmur and then played them Monster, Okay, that's, but the thing is, there's like what 15 years between those two records, yeah. More or less. It's only over a decade. It's not album one, album two, or to play people the early iteration, the hair metal version of Pantera before they became the Pantera that everyone knows and loves.
Well, they say, you know, the sophomore album is the more difficult one, right? You have all the time to write your first album and then, you know, only 2 years to write your next one. However, with the four-year gap, it really almost feels like their second debut album in a way, right?
Yeah.
You know, in my notes too, you mentioned, Stephen, with the leveling, you know, like this is a statement that they have leveled up tremendously as a band. They have an identity now that just, I feel like, was kind of missing. You know, they come in hot with that, you know, the bright harmonica and everything. And sure, it may sound like other bands, but this right here with this first song, it is the Delamitri that you expect now for the rest of their career. And Justin's singing is just so much stronger. You can hear the lilt in his voice and, just much more powerful. So, record label, I don't know what happened during those 4 years. They figured out who to be and how to write songs. And, you know, this is a great one. This has to be the first song that, you know, I heard of theirs. They got airplay on WXRT in Chicago. And it's around this time when I started listening to that radio station on a regular basis, especially when I was home from college. So, yeah. And there are other really good songs on this album too. Yes.
Oh yeah, definitely. But yeah, and which like the debut album actually did not chart, didn't really do anything. This album did, and we'll go into it more a little bit. But it was hit number 6 on the UK chart for the album, and for the songs, Nothing Ever Happens was number 11, and I think it's Spit in the Rain, is that? I'm not as familiar with that song, but
Full of Rain.
That one is number 21, made number 21 in the UK charts. And like I said, they were just the Kiss This Thing Goodbye almost made the Billboard top 40 in the US, but didn't quite make it there. So they're getting some play, but like Justin said, in the United States with this album. And like I said, it was released in 1989. They enlisted the help of Andy Alston on keyboard. And then they also added, in the studio, they had Mick Slavin and Steven Irvine. But once the album was done, they decided to leave the band for unknown reasons to me. And they were replaced by David Cummings, I think. My handwriting is horrible. And Brian McDermott. So, like I said, a lot of changes in the band lineup through, and that'll remain consistent throughout the history of the band. So,
I think it's interesting that it almost made the top 40 in America, because certainly that you know, Kiss This Thing Goodbye has a very American appealing to my ears. It's like it feels like it's been written to appeal to an American audience almost,
yeah.
You know, with the elements that's there. Not in a mainstream kind of way. It's much more that radio friendly, but also, you know, it's not indie. But it's also, even though they're a Scottish band, they don't sound very Scottish.
No,
on that song.
Well, the sound is actually it just struck me. It's kind of similar to. Black Velvet by Alanna Miles, which was a big hit in the United States around this time too.
True.
Maybe.
And hold that thought for the next one later on. but at least that was the first song that I heard of theirs when it charted in the singles in the UK. I remember hearing it on the radio, and they're like, "Oh, who's this new band with their debut single?" You know that. I'm...
Right.
Yeah.
Of course, it was.
More than definitely. So yeah, so we heard Kiss This Thing Goodbye. Why don't we go ahead and listen to a little bit of Nothing Ever Happens and hear a little bit more of what the band's doing in this album.
Post office clocks put up signs saying position closed. And secretaries turn off typewriters and put on their coats. And janitors padlock the gates for security guards to patrol. And bachelors phone up their friends for a drink while the married ones turn on a chat show. And they'll all be lonely tonight and lonely tomorrow. Gentlemen, time please, you know we can't serve anymore. Now the traffic lights change to stop when there's nothing to go. And by 5 o'clock everything's dead, and every third car is a cab. And ignorant people sleep in their beds like the dope white mice in the college lab. And nothing ever happens, nothing happens at all. The needle returns to the start of the song, and we all sing along like before. And we'll all be lonely tonight and lonely tomorrow. Telephone.
We'll all be lonely tonight and lonely tomorrow. Whew.
I'm telling you. So, Stephen, I believe you were the one who chose this song. Why did you choose this one?
Well, this was also a hit in the UK that I remember hearing this on the radio.
Yeah.
Charted. And I heard an interview with Justin where he said he wrote that one and he sat down and thought, yeah, that's a good one. And you can just, and to alluding to sort of Justin's comment earlier about how, I don't know if you're careful, when I'm talking about Justin as in Justin Curry and Justin as in Justin Steiner. Here we're getting our Justins mixed up.
Yep.
But yeah, Justin Curry has said that he knew he'd written a good one with that one. Yeah. And then, you know, as you said earlier, Justin, like the quality of the songwriting has gone on leaps and bounds. Just listen to the lyrics.
Yeah,
in that song, it's just so. Never mind the fact it's got a great. Well, hasn't he says it hasn't. Justin Curry says he doesn't really think it's got much of a tune to it, but it's got something.
Yeah,
good. But the lyric, I think he certainly his songwriting from a lyrical point of view really has come on just so much leaps and bounds. I mean, we'll not have a listen to this song, but there's another song on this album called Empty, which had a great line that I had to make a note of, which is. You've been seeing SOS, but it's just your clock reading 5:05. What a great line that is.
Yeah. Well, and this has to, you know, Justin Curry might not think much of the tune, but, you know, when you're sequencing a record, you make decisions, right? And so the last song on the record should be like your On the Way Out statement, and this is the album closer. And I think the band tends to do pretty well at the end of albums with their song placement. And this is the first example of that for me, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not the last by a long way. No,
no.
They definitely close strong. But yeah, I think again, they talked a little bit about how they've been trying to make these songs and this album with a big band sound. And then ironically, this really successful song is basically Justin Curry on acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
Ian's done a little bit of mandolin and then a little bit of accordion, and there's the rest of the band not on it at all.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of their most successful well known tunes, you know. So but
definitely. Completely lost my train of thought. But oh yeah. I know I'm usually more of a music first guy and lyrics second. But with this band, I mean the lyrics definitely come to the forefront. There are some really, really smart lyrics, especially as we get on into some other albums after this. But yeah, that soft accordion and mandolin in the back, I think that kind of just makes the song. If it was just an acoustic guitar, but you had to have that little bit in the back just to kind of lift it up a little bit. I think it helps.
It works so well with the lilting nature of it gives it that sort of wave-like sort of rise and fall.
Yeah.
that if it was just acoustic guitar, it wouldn't have. It gives that more of that lilting quality. It just accentuates it, I think, yeah. And elevate, as you say, Kevin, it elevates it.
Well, the band has a facility too for you know, more ballads, you know, the slower, more contemplative, that this is obviously a good example of. Earlier on the album too, Move Away, Jimmy Blue kind of has that same impact as well.
Yeah.
With the rise and the fall, but and I think that's one good thing about the band, right? Is that they can work in the different modes and be successful. You know, you have "Kiss This Thing Goodbye," which is this very bright pop song. You know, to "Nothing Ever Happens There," which is still a pop song but a very different flavor. And then on the album too, another you know, a song that came to get quite a lot of airplay, at least, you know, on the stations that I listened to, was Stone Cold Sober, which is a completely different type of a tune than the other two as well, and also very successful.
Yeah. So why don't we go ahead and give a listen to Stone Cold Sober right now, and then we can talk about it a little bit.
See, it's got like that, it's almost kind of like your U2 slow fade in, right? Something a little kind of bubbling on the surface and then popping out. But that, I mean, that's a darker song for sure, but it does not sound like either of the other two off of this album that we've listened to, which again goes to that varied songwriting, right? The debut, the actual debut album, just is a wash of sounds that you can't differentiate anything from, and here's three really good examples of different songwriting modes that are all very successful.
Yeah, and again, another really memorable and sort of melodic song. Yeah, another, you know, they do know their way around the chorus from time to time, and so I've certainly felt so on that one.
Definitely. I mean, Stone Cold's over looking for bottles of rum. That's that pretty much tells you the state that the writer is in at that time. So, yeah, that, it's one of those, the music just really kind of propels it. And like you said, it's a darker theme on the song, but it really just comes, he knows how to write those songs. It's just really, really good. That's all I can say. So, any other comments on the album "Waking Hours" from Steven or Justin?
I mean, it's a good album. It's not their best album for me, but you know, here's where the band starts to sound like the band, as we've said. And you listen to this, and then you get excited, like, oh, okay, where are they going from here? Which we'll be getting to here shortly.
Yeah, it's a solid album. You say, yeah, it's not their best, but it's also very good. And you know, if you just said, oh, "Okay, I'm just going to start with this second debut," you're not going to come away disappointed. You'll know whether you're going to like this band if you listen to that album, which is kind of listening to the first album. That doesn't tell you anything other than who are these people.
Yeah, definitely. So, all right, so that brings us to their third album, Change Everything, comes in out in 1992, and actually maintains the same lineup from the last album, well, the touring of the last album. So this one reaches number two in the UK, and the album was there for 2 weeks and was kept out of the number one spot for one album, and that was Lionel Richie's Back to Front.
What?
Which is like a greatest hits compilation.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, UK, what are you doing?
Did not see that coming.
Sorry about that, guys. We let you down there.
I was like, oh, Lord. But I remember because it would get the bell ringing. This is known from when I worked at the record store. That Lionel Richie album sold like gangbusters. It was a greatest hits compilation. Had even some of the Commodore stuff in it. But it sold a lot. So I'm sure that's it did the same in the UK apparently. So but yeah, so let's see, whatever my notes, here we go.
Well, can we just comment on the fact that they called their second album Waking Hours, but they called this album Change Everything? Am I the only one who thinks they got that the wrong way around? Because the second album should have been called Change Everything, because that's what they did. You know, it's like, no, this album should have been called More of the Same, not Change Everything.
Yeah, definitely. The other one was Change Everything. This one's kind of waking, yeah. Like, okay, now we're definitely bringing up everything, you know? So, let's see. Always the Last to Know was number 13 on the UK charts. And actually made it into the top 40 in the U.S., which got them on Late Night with David Letterman, which in 1992, that was freaking huge. He was the guy for Late Night, as far as I'm concerned. And also was on the Woodstock 94 lineup. So it was very... definitely started getting them into the U.S. Listenership, I guess you'd say. So, all right. So, Stephen, what do you think about this album?
Yeah, I think it is more the same. This is their biggest selling album in the UK. Again, it's still not their best. But if you like the debut, this is kind of more of that, the same sort of variety of styles and songwriting, and with some really good tunes on there. It's one that's hard not to recommend, although there is some others that we might recommend slightly higher, but it's a very good album, and again it's got some hits on there, so especially Always the Last to Know, that was very I remember again that being a hit over here, so or in the charts certainly. So
should we take a quick listen to that one then?
Yeah. that's such a great song.
Yeah, didn't really want to, I thought just keep that, let it run, really, just play the whole song, but yeah.
Exactly. I was singing along, and yeah, but definitely, you know, turn the mic off. Y'all didn't want to hear that, but yeah, that just such a great tune. And I love, you know, spoiler alert for those, it says, you know, he was basically the last to know and everything. And then that line right at the end where he said, so that he had been cheating on her, just like she had been cheating on him. And I think that line just really just brings the whole song together. It's just really, really enjoy it. I like it.
Yeah, lyrically, it really paints a picture and tells a story, you know, has that bitterness, like a wry bitterness, though, almost, too. But yeah, it really kind of coalesces with that line. And so you're like, oh, okay, I see what's going on here. You know, meanwhile, you can, if you don't want to listen to the lyrics, you can just completely bop your head along with the music and the tune and just, you know, because it's a great sounding tune.
Yeah, well, you know, you mentioned about Black Velvet, Prudence. So coming back to a little nugget about Always the Last to Know. So the song started off as a Faces style jam, which you can clearly hear from that intro, the riff, the main guitar riff and the cowbell and all that stuff. And it's that sort of Stonesy, Facey kind of thing. But then the record label had kind of said, they needed a hit single from this one. So the producer of the album, Gil Norton, basically, he took, and once you've heard this, you won't be able to unhear it. So apologies. But he basically took the musical arrangement of John Waite's Missing You and used that for the verse. And married it to the riff and the chorus that the guys had done. Sort of kind of that was all kind of done, you know, sort of in the edit, as it were, to turn it into something different. But if you then go back and listen to Missing You by John Waite and the verse of Always the Last to Know, there's the arrangement of the way that the drums, the guitar and the bass is all laid out is pretty much identical. So.
Well, I mean, if you're gonna take from a song, "Missing You" is a good John Waite song. So,
well, but the thing is, it doesn't sound like that either. Does it?
No, it doesn't.
It's not. They've not sort of ripped it off. It's just the producer's gone, right, okay, I'm going to use the sort of sparseness of that arrangement and marry it to this very stylistically different thing, and come up with someone that's, you know, equally as good. You know,
structure, right? Yeah, I mean, for me, Change Everything, the band levels up again. This is definitely while Waking Hours is a good album, Change Everything is an even better album. One song that just I love particularly, if you guys will indulge me for a second, is The Ones That You Love Lead You Nowhere. I don't know. There's something just about this song that I could listen to over and over and over again.
Let's do that then, shall we?
I don't know about you guys, that just the rollicking nature of that one. It's got kind of almost a stop start that goes on with it, even though it's not really stopping and starting most of the time. It happens a little bit later in the song. The bridge on that song is really nifty as well. Just, you know, again, that pop songwriting construction. Just a fun song to listen to.
Yeah, I saw the air drums coming out there, Justin. Got to be done. It's interesting, actually. This is a comment I'll put in my summary, but I think it seems apposite now. The contrast between Delamitri and another Scottish band, Primal Scream, because both bands have clearly been heavily influenced by the Rolling Stones, but when sort of Primal Scream tried to sort of do their homage to the Stones, Don't Give Up and Give Out, and you get songs like Rocks Off, which you could just drop it straight onto Exile on Main Street or Let It Bleed and it would fit perfectly. You know, if you put Mick Jagger singing it, it would fit perfectly. Whereas with Delamitri, while the Stones' influence is clearly evident there, you hear it in the guitar riffs and some of the stuff, but if Jagger was singing that, it wouldn't sound like a Stones song because there's still something else there. They don't veer into pastiche. They kind of take the influence and use it, whereas Primal Scream at a certain point got into the area of pastiche, to my mind anyway. And yeah, I thought it's just an interesting contrast, really, between the two.
Definitely. It is another great pop gem, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, so we'll go now and listen to something a little bit different on the album. And this is Surface of the Moon. It's just a really nice, beautiful song to me. So we'll listen to that now. I just love the strains of the guitar at the beginning of the song and during the choruses, and then during the verse, it's just bare minimum. Just listen to the lyrics. Let's not, you know, the music's in the background. Let's just listen. So I think it's just a really good song.
Right. Like, where could you slot that in? You know, we've talked about their different kind of song modes. It's not fully a ballad, although it is kind of a ballad, but it's got that, you know, that guitar underpinning and everything that takes it, you know, out of the ballad realm. It's kind of a melding of their different song styles in that one. What do you think, Stephen?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my favorites off of this one. And I think, other than the fact it also has the word moon in the title, which is obviously this is not the only similarity. It made me think a bit of The Police, that one, certainly the intro and into the verse. You know, it's kind of got that sparseness
that's true
that the sort of the later Police stuff had, but also atmospheric, you know, and melodic, you know, and it actually ironically, this is the album that came out in the 90s, but yeah, the sound also throws back to the 80s more as well. Your mainstream 80s sound rather than the sort of indie 80s sound, if you see what I mean. But yeah, I do particularly like that one. It's just again, the wordplay's great. There's nice guitar breaks, which always goes down well with me. Yeah. I'll probably after Always the Last, and that's probably my favorite one on this album.
Yeah, more than definitely. Enjoy that one. Steven, you had anything? Justin, sorry. You had anything else to go on that song?
No, I think we kind of covered it. Just overall, this album's got a lot of, a lot of good different flavors. I mean, we're not going to hear it all, but like Be My Downfall is more kind of sophisticated pop. Just Like a Man kind of has that bouncing bass line, another different flavor. And then, the closer too is kind of, it's not as ballad as on Waking Hours, but it's more of a sprawling, sprawling song. Sometimes I Just Have to Say Your Name. Just a lot of good variety on this album for sure.
It's an album I still listen to pretty often. It's just good back to front. So I think what we'll do, I'm sorry.
What a throwback it is as well. Sorry, can I just say what a throwback it is? This wouldn't happen now, that the big hit is sitting at number 8.
Yep.
On the track listing. You know, that would be the first track or within the first 3 tracks now. It just wouldn't get, you album wouldn't get sequenced like that now.
Right.
Because of the way, the discoverability and the streaming and all this stuff, the biggest song is midway through the second half.
Yeah, it's definitely still that older model of sequencing your album, right? That that all 3 of us grew up on. Certainly, I don't know, and I'm sure that the average age of our podcast listeners as well also grew up on.
So they were just about bringing this episode to a close. And on our next one, we will talk about Delamitri's next album, which I think we all agree is their best album. And that is Twisted. Really, really great album. So, but I think what we'll do is we're going to finish the show off with the song To Last a Lifetime. Did you have any? Did you want to hear that right now? Or?
Sure, I think that's a good playout song.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. No, we'll play out that and we'll reconvene again tomorrow. Then sounds like a plan.
Sounds good.
All right. This has been us chattering on, I guess. Right.
All right. I'm Kevin Clement, and we had, of course, Stephen Routledge and Justin Steiner. So, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
So she